welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann Report. It is Tuesday, November 11th, 2025. I want to thank you so much for joining this platform, joining us. Anyway, myself and, of course, Eric the Tech on the back side of things. Everyone, say hello to Eric the Tech. Thank you. Eric the Tech, say hello to everyone. Okay, thank you. He's awful quiet tonight. There we go. Happy Veterans Day. I just hope everyone today did thank someone who served in the armed forces and the military today. I really do. Yeah, I think that's a very important thing to do. And, you know, I remember when I did not serve in the military. I've got no military experience, and shame on me for that. However, you know, my dad served in World War II. Pacific Theater of Operation, and some of the things most of the things he wouldn't tell me, but some of the things that I know just from pictures. Man, wow. And my uncle, of course, my mother's brother, was shot in the Battle of the Bulge, and he actually was jumped out of a plane, a parachute, and was shot on his way down, got caught up in a tree, got captured. It was just a horrible story, and he passed away. I went to his funeral in Arlington in 1976. Wow. But you know, I'm thinking about the people today, and I hope you wish my next guest, or thank my next or my guest tonight for his service. And that's John Moore, the Liberty Man. You know him as the Liberty Man from thelibertyman.com. The link to his website and his web internet presence will be in the program description box at HagmannPI.com. And I want to thank everyone for your support of this platform. I want to thank everyone for tuning in, because you know what? You can spend the next couple of hours doing whatever, not listening, not watching, not with me, not with us. And I recognize the fact that you're making a choice. And even if you listen to this the next day or a couple of days later, there you go. And I also want to say one thing. Tomorrow night, look, we're going to have a fantastic show tonight, but tomorrow night, very, very extremely special guest, Paul McGuire, coming back and coming back hot. But tonight, coming in hot, John Moore. John, thank you for joining me tonight. I appreciate that. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to be here. Thank you, Doug. It is Veterans Day. Thank you for wishing me well. And the day that the 11th day, the 11th hour, we hit in, was it?
11-11-11-11.
Yeah, 11th day, 11th month, 11th hour. Yeah. World War One ended in 1918, I believe it was.
Nothing to see there, but you know, yes. Very interesting.
Well, quite frankly, a war we had no business being part of, and yeah. I don't want to dwell on that, but the world changed dramatically in terms of manufacturing capability, alliances, and so forth, and we really had no business being part of that war. We had no enemies in that war. Germany was not our enemy. It's far from it. We ended up with troops in Russia that were not repatriated. There's a report. There's a Senate report at my website about the men left behind World War One, World War II, Korea, and Vietnam in the hands of communists. That's a Senate report that was done in the 1970s, I believe.
Right. That's, yes. And folks, I want to, for those who don't know John, I just want to say this before we get started. You know, between John Moore and myself, both of us are credentialed investigators, specializing myself in cold case homicides, the investigation thereof, also the forensic science of blood spatter analysis, that forensic discipline, as well as surveillance, certified expert in the court system. But between us and John, of course, is homicide investigator, as well. So between us, our combined experience exceeds the lifespan of the average person in the West. So I think we're looking at something like close to 30 or 78 years combined experience.
Right, right.
So that's who you're listening to and watching tonight. So John, again, thank you on that side of things as well, because, you know, you've done some amazing work, and I know I have, but no, I'm kidding. But I'll tell you what, it's really great to spend some time with a person of your caliber and, of course, your class. So what do you want to talk about tonight, my friend?
Well, Tucker Carlson, I'm a big fan of Tucker, and I subscribe to his website, interviewed a scientist engineer named Dane Wigington. I've been aware of Dane's work for a number of years. A friend of mine who's also with my Tuesday morning roundtable frequently, Steve O'Neill, nuclear scientist, has been in contact with Dane quite a few times. But what Dane did in this interview with Tucker Carlson is connect the dots that needed to be connected regarding the spraying of aluminum nanoparticles along with barium and other harmful chemicals on the United States and other countries all over the world. The dots including the harm caused to insects, plankton, the ocean's plankton that creates our oxygen, the forest, which help create our oxygen, the harm to human beings, and the fact that 30 states have passed laws making it illegal to spray these harmful chemicals over their states. It should be politically neutral. I don't see whether it needs to be any conflict between Republicans and Democrats on this issue, which is causing harm to the planet. And I've been aware of this and writing about it and speaking about it occasionally for quite a few years. There's an article at my website being thelibertyman.com. My article is titled, "Where Have All the Insects Gone?" Following that article are two letters written by a female entomologist in England, verifying the same things taking place in England. And this has been going on for years. World War III pales in comparison to the consequences of these nanoparticle, aluminum particles being sprayed on our fields, on our people, causing harm to the plants, causing harm to the food we eat, causing harm to human beings inhaling these particles. It's a massive issue that you don't need scientific verification, although we do have that. All you need to do is take a drive at night in warm weather, and at the end of the drive, you'll see, oh, there's no bugs in my windshield. That's pretty upfront and personal, isn't it, Doug?
My friend, it is. You know, I was before the show, I was sharing with John. And folks, please make sure you go to thelibertyman.com. That is thelibertyman. It's really simple, .com. And scroll down to his article. But I was sharing with you back in June of 1978, I remember. 78. Yeah, that was my buddy and I. We drove a pickup truck from Northwest Pennsylvania to Daytona Beach for spring break. And anyway, the bugs, we had a scrape. We used a snow scraper to scrape the bugs off the windshield as well as the front of the vehicle. And I remember now driving down recently, well, a couple of years ago, and it was like we just went across town. Not my buddy, my wife and I, and our dogs. So there's a difference. And to that point, there's two things. Eric the Tech, can you put up that link to that Twitter post from who posted that? Tucker Carlson posted that, obviously. Okay, can you put the entire post up there from X? Because I want to point two things out, and then I'm going to turn it over to John. This is something that I think everyone should really pass around. If you scroll down to the bottom, right underneath the video itself, okay, there it is, right there. Right, a community note, or, well, I guess, I don't know. Is that the readers added context they thought people might want to know? And look at this disclaimer, folks. Should we read it together? Especially for those listening, you can't see it, so I'll read it to you. No U.S. government admission confirms chemtrails are real. Chemtrails refers to claims that contrails are chemtrails. No, it doesn't. Shut up. No, it doesn't. Okay, but let's read on. Scientific sources explain contrails as condensation. Well, yeah. Geoengineering involves proposed climate strategies separate from chemtrail theories. Now, look, I don't know whether, you know, after reading this now out loud, I don't know whether this is a, I don't know. I just don't know about this.
That's from some reader, not from Tucker, obviously.
Right, an aggregate of readers by way of the heading. So, okay. Now, having said that, it's interesting because no U.S. government admission confirms chemtrails as the word exists in that are real. Eric the Tech, could you, and John, I'm going to toss this to you right after this. Two things. Number one, the second link I sent to you, and this is of John Brennan. It's a minute and a half or a minute, a minute and something. It's under a minute and a half. That's link number one. And then to John's article, which is a great read. This would be after Brennan, the cue of Tucker's video at 3905, just kind of to punch the content of John's finely written article. So video one would be John Brennan, that scumbag, but I digress, talking about this geoengineering and essentially confirming what is taking place. So if you don't mind, Eric the Tech, go ahead and hit video one.
Another example is the array of technologies, often referred to collectively as geoengineering, that potentially could help reverse the warming effects of global climate change. One that has gained my personal attention is stratospheric aerosol injection, or SAI, a method of seeding the stratosphere with particles that can help reflect the sun's heat in much the same way that volcanic eruptions do. An SAI program could limit global temperature increases, reducing some risks associated with higher temperatures and providing the world economy additional time to transition from fossil fuels. This process is also relatively inexpensive. The National Research Council estimates that a fully deployed SAI program would cost about $10 billion yearly. As promising as it may be, moving forward on SAI would also raise a number of challenges for our government and for the international community. On the technical side, greenhouse gas emission reductions would still have to accompany SAI to address other climate change effects, such as ocean acidification, because SAI alone would not remove greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. On the geopolitical side, the technology's potential to alter weather patterns and benefit certain regions of the world at the expense of other regions could trigger sharp opposition by some nations. Others might seize on SAI's benefits and back away from their commitment to carbon dioxide reductions. And as with other breakthrough technologies, global norms and standards are lacking to guide the deployment and implementation of SAI and other geoengineering initiatives.
So there's that, John. What do you think?
Well, that's the cover story. That has been the cover story for decades, quite frankly. Carbon dioxide is not poison. Carbon dioxide is food for the plants. The scientists have looked back, you know, thousands of years, and they found that when our planet was a lush green planet, we had higher CO2 levels than we do now. So if we want a lusher, greener planet, we want more CO2, which means more cotton, more corn, more soybeans, more potatoes, more oranges, more apples. That's what the plants need to live, is carbon dioxide. It's a good thing. It's nothing bad about it at all.
God made carbon dioxide just like he made everything else. And you're exactly right. The whole climate change crap. Look, the climate is changing.
Well, they want to kill us. There's nothing wrong with.
There you go.
There's no such thing as fossil fuels, by the way.
Thank you.
That's a misnomer.
Fossil fuels, folks. Yeah.
The oil wells in your state, Pennsylvania, more than a century old, are still pumping oil, aren't they?
I can drive about 45 minutes and go to Titusville, Pennsylvania, Drake. And I'll tell you what, that is where the first oil well was dropped. Yes. And they're still active. Many of them around that area are still pumping out.
Right.
And one more thing, and then we can continue this. I just want to point out that, see, we have a great, John, our audience is just a great, well-educated audience.
Right.
Earth-shaking news. This is a link, and Eric, you can toss that link up if you'd like. Deadly chemtrail secrets that will blow your mind. This, of course, is from Substack.com, and the author there is Earth-shaking news. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, as well as for writing this article. And that's Rick, the disabled Vietnam era veteran and truther. So folks, there it is. Visit that link as well, in addition to John Moore's fine article. And look, print these out too, and share them with others, because one last thing and then I'm going to shut up. I was on a medical appointment yesterday, and I was talking to a nurse who, just a great young lady. Her and her husband have a lot of acreage in Western New York. And we were talking about heavy metal poisoning. And she said, you know, yeah, you know, we can eat as clean as we want or try to, but we're being poisoned through heavy metals. And it was just a tremendous, so people are waking up. It was a tremendous conversation. People are waking up to this. So back to you, my friend. This is so critically important. It really is.
Well, I haven't checked, but I'll check real quick at my website. My webmaster is supposed to have posted the version of Tucker Carlson interview that has these timestamps on it that make it easier for people to find things more quickly. And I'm a big fan of Dane Wigington, have been for years. His interview, like I say, connects the dots that we need connected. But going to the former CIA director's talk about controlling the climate, the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Control, they wanted countries to go along with this bogus thing to, and we have Western countries, United States, Canada, and European countries going along with it, while the two biggest countries in the world, as far as population and producing carbon dioxide, are China and India, that are given a free pass to make all the carbon dioxide they want. While we're harming our economies, harming our people by cutting back production to meet this fantasy that carbon dioxide is some kind of bad, evil poison, which it's not. So I believe that President Trump will, if he hasn't gone public about this already, will be going public to do away with these international accords out of the United Nations. The bottom line is that they want to kill us. They want to harm our industry, harm our people, harm our plants, and they're doing all these things. And one of the things that I'm really glad that Tucker Carlson talked about with Dane Wigington is the mindset of the men and women who had the ability to start and stop the spraying of the nanoparticles. And they know that they're harming themselves, their children, their grandchildren, and quite frankly, they don't care. It's a bizarre, freakish, dangerous mindset that the people who could stop it aren't stopping it because they don't care that they harm themselves, their children, or their grandchildren. It's a very bizarre, strange mindset, don't you think, Doug?
Yes. And look, I find this whole this topic, among others, extremely interesting now that it's getting more and more traction. To your point about carbon dioxide, there are so many people that do not, if you ask the average person on the street, and by average, I mean the normal, you know, sane individual on the street, what's the percentage of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere? In the Earth's atmosphere, what's that number? And I heard this and verified it, but I heard this from a hearing in a congressional hearing, and that number is 0.042%. So, right. Or if you want to round up, 0.0423%. So it's It's a small part, but a very important part of our the cycle of life here on our planet.
Right.
And yes, again, to your point, you've got this group of psychopaths. And I say that meaning the actual literal term of a psychopath. Explain to me how, I'm striving to understand this. Explain to me how Bill Gates can dump a load of mosquitoes, you know, genetically modified mosquitoes in any state. What gives him the right ability, lawful right to do that? What gives him the ability and right, well, the ability, I guess, is the money, but to get to with the clot shots and other injections of in Africa, what gives these people the right, John, or the view that they have that right to do this? What the hell's going on here?
Well, they've given themselves the right. And there's been no granting of a right from any entity that has the ability to do so. And what they're doing is they can do this until a state's attorney general or a U.S. attorney general stops them, basically, is what it is. And we've got it, and I've seen, and you've seen the same thing, about 17 attorney generals in the states at the state level that I think may take action against Bill Gates and probably will if they haven't already. Pam Bondi certainly has the ability to stop Bill Gates from doing these harmful, dangerous things. Modifying mosquitoes and turning them loose into the wild is very dangerous. We don't know what the consequences are going to be, quite frankly. We really don't.
And, yeah, I like that. I don't like that. I'm saying that facetiously. But isn't it interesting that we're not sure. It's kind of like the atomic bomb. We're not sure if we're going to set the entire atmosphere on fire. But let's see what happens. Kind of the same thing now. We don't know what's going to happen. But hey, yeah, let's give it
a try.
And by the way, thank you, Frogs. Frogs are cool on X for reposting our feed tonight. Okay, yeah, it's really crazy. And we need to take a stand. You mentioned Pam Bondi. Your thoughts on her, now again, being with your experience as a homicide investigator, my experience as a credentialed investigator in various similar veins, your thoughts on her?
I agree with some of the commentators that you need to keep her away from a microphone. She doesn't do well in front of a microphone. I think she's doing good work otherwise. Carrying out the agenda that has been given to her by President Trump and by her oath of office. I'm okay with Pam Bondi. I really am.
Okay.
I've been working with prosecutors for decades, as have you, and she's doing an okay job compared to what went before her.
Well, okay, so this goes, look. We could take this a number of different ways. I understand, like you understand, how much goes into just a normal, if there is such a thing, a homicide case to prosecute as well as to defend the homicide case in a court, in a trial. It's not like it is on TV. There's a lot of stuff.
That's right.
And it does take time. It takes precision. It takes a lot of things. So, imagine, folks, this on a larger scale, and that's kind of where Bondi's at. So do I have a little bit of forgiveness, mental forgiveness for that? Yeah, I kind of, and understanding, I do. But I also think, the powers of delegation are not being used, and she could delegate responsibilities a lot better. And which brings me to another point I want to get your take on, and we can revisit any of this, but the latest, obviously, the latest, in my view, the latest exploited topic, the most recent topic that's being exploited on the social media sphere, that's being weaponized and utilized to divide, and that is the allegation of Steve Baker from The Blaze saying that the J-6 pipe bomber, in quotation marks, has been identified. Now, look, I'm not going to name this person because I'm just not. You can read it. It's all over social media. I believe that person is a female, by the way. Not the named person, obviously, but the person in the film is a female. I believe that.
Right.
But I also see what's happening right now, and I'm not liking this. This is being used. This topic has been weaponized, John. Just like the other hot button topics, where people are now looking at this with unnecessary emotion, and they're leaving their senses behind. In other words, you know, you have two teams now on the internet. You've got the people who are saying Baker's right. He's a great investigator. He's, you know, and he's holding the feet. He's holding Patel's and Bondi's and Bongino's feet to the fire. And then the other side saying, well, it's pretty reckless to do what he did. And then, of course, you've got this huge rift between conservatives in name, some in name only, and some really, but this big rift between people who are just piling on against one another. John, this is not a productive environment, and I do believe it's being exploited by certain factions within the deeper state, deep state, whatever. So there it is. Your comments and thoughts, and I'm going to step back and listen as you.
Okay. Well, behind closed doors, I think that the head of the FBI and Pam Bondi, Cash Patel and Pam Bondi are playing a strategy on how to deal with this. As I said before we went on the air, the real story is who was paying this woman or motivating her to do what she did. She was just a low-level person doing something on behalf of somebody at a very high level. Very high level. And we could speculate about that, who that was, but that's all it is speculation until she's been brought before some authority and put under oath to give her testimony about why she did and on whose behalf she was working. This is part of a much larger event, of course, the January 6th. I just heard an interview on the radio of a man who was a lieutenant commander in the Navy, and a person who was arrested for January 6th had his name and commander. The person arrested was an oath keeper. So the authorities thought that this lieutenant commander was commander of the Oath Keepers, which, of course, he wasn't. And he spent 53 days, I think it was, in solitary confinement. He wrote a book about it. And was treated very harshly and very badly for something that he had no involvement with, quite frankly. And I think these pipe bombs are going to be the same thing. This woman, who allegedly, and she probably did plant them, was working for somebody at a very high level in order to cause maximum damage that day to the national dialogue of what was taking place that day, maximum damage to President Trump. It was planned to bomb to blame these two incidents or these pipe bombs on President Trump and or his people to cause the maximum damage as we went into that whole event. I think the truth will come out over the next few weeks about who this woman was working for, what the goal was, and so forth, and the rest of this will just be a footnote in history. So that's my belief.
Well, and Eric Tech, I just sent you this, folks. I just want to say this. I totally agree, John. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we are going to see some movement on this because, for all of the, with respect to the identity of the individual in the videos, it's my belief that this person was identified pretty much immediately, okay, by the FBI, or they knew of this person. But to the larger point, and I think this is what we're missing, and thank you, Eric the Tech, I appreciate that. I sent this out 4 days ago. It might have been before or in the midst of the, or while I think we were waiting for the actual report from Steve Baker. But boy, I'm the king of run-on sentences in certain writings. But I wrote this, drawing from years of my own field work, from extensive reviews of surveillance footage, cross-referencing timelines, and interviewing sources. I can say with absolute certainty that the individual who physically planted those pipe bombs on January 5, and I have something to say about that too, at the DNC and RNC near there, they were just merely one cog in a very big, intricate machine. And this is kind of, this is, no, this is not kind of, this is exactly what John's saying. This was no, like I add, this is no lone wolf actor. It was a meticulously orchestrated maneuver within a broader network of conspirators, reaching tentacles into the uppermost echelons of government, intelligence agencies, and political operatives. Look, you uncover this, John, you're 100% right. The actor depicted here is important, but not half as important as the individuals, the network behind this. And people, I find that if you want to know, if you don't like the answers that you're getting, you might want to check the premise of your question, or questions, plural. And I think John nailed it. We need to get the identity of this person. Yeah, that's important. But the identity of that person's handlers is more important.
That's right. That's where the real story is who she was working for, on whose behalf she was doing this. That's the real story. She's obviously not an innocent person, but she's the heart of the story is who she was working for.
100%, my brother. And you know, you look at all of this, all of this stuff on X, and like I've said many times, you know, people have a tendency to respond to things that are emotional or emotional triggers, and there are a lot of psyops, I guess, if you will, being played, pieces of information being exploited with the intent to divide us as a conservative movement population. And a lot of people are falling for this, and it hurts to watch this. I'm disgusted by it, but I'm also thinking let's put our brains together and work together and efforts together and compel the people who are in power to become more transparent, to provide information that we have paid for, that we need, we deserve, and for the survival of our nation. So there. But yes, John, you're 100% right. And I do think that this draws in members of Congress, certain members of Congress, certain members of the State Department, certainly from the executive branch. And I'll just leave it at that. Then. Am I wrong, John, do you think?
Or? No, not at all. I think you're right on. You're right on target. Yeah. There's a lot of topics we can get into. Do you have one you'd like to jump right into here?
You know, no, I, folks, my guest is John Moore, thelibertyman.com, and I'd like you to kind of pick the topic because right now I feel a little bit, I've caught in tunnel vision, and I don't like that feeling. So, you select the topic, and let's go with that.
Okay. Well, the economy.
Okay.
I'm very hopeful that we're about to enter a new golden age for the United States, for the West in general. President Trump, with these tariffs, has placed us in a good position to recover from the out of control spending, related to this is the shutdown of government has exposed who's really benefiting from the Obamacare, and that would be the medical and insurance, especially the insurance industry. The health insurance industry, I believe their profits have more than doubled since Obamacare has come into being. It's a massive scam, quite frankly, that needs to come to an end. I hope that President Trump will bring it to an end. Obamacare needs to be ended. The involvement of the federal government involved in an individual's health care needs to come to an end anyway. That's never should have taken place. People like getting free stuff, but that's there has to be an end to this. The Uncle Sugar is about to run out of sugar, and we can't afford to pay for people's health care, give them food. Those things just need to end, and hopefully they will soon.
Look, you're right. I was. Boy, again, this is not about me. This is about the situation. You know, I had to pick up, or I didn't have to. I chose to pick up a prescription today for me. And sometimes the pharma industry, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right? And but that said, I want to pay for it. And look, I've got the best insurance policy you can have. Okay. In terms of, well, apparently it's not the best but the cost was $696. And I looked at the woman, and I know the farm. I mean, we're good friends with the pharmacist and the people there. And I said, no, that can't be right. And she said, oh yeah, that's right. So I talked to the manager, Bob, and we went in his office, and I said, well, you know, what's going on here? And he said, I just got one word for you. And that's Obamacare. I said, what? Oh yeah. Yeah. We would not be in this position had it not been for the changes made by the Affordable Care Act. Folks, it's real. People are hurting. By the way, I said, no, thank you. Don't need it that much. So can't afford it. Don't want it. Don't need it. So John, to your point, man, I'm telling you, I don't think people really understand how badly Obama damaged, and John McCain with his, you know, thumbs, how badly they damaged the 25% of the economy of this country. I just don't think they do. Good to you, sir.
Well, these are the insurance industry, pharmaceutical industry, worked with her lobbyists to get these things passed, wrongly passed, I should say. What needs to happen? Let's talk about mitigation here.
Okay.
If Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution does not allow any funds to be transferred from the U.S. Treasury to private individuals or private companies, except for the 18 things that are enumerated there, such as defending the country and so forth. If the 50 states want to transfer money from the state's treasury to pay for people's prescriptions or food or both, they can do that. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that bans individual states from spending money any way they choose to. So that needs to happen, or otherwise these entitlements are going to bankrupt the country. Transfer of money from the U.S. Treasury to insurance companies for health care, to people for food, it needs to come to an end and be transferred to the states. And some states will, and some states won't. And that's the way it can and should be. The states that go that route, like California, they'll bankrupt themselves. The states that don't, they will prosper. And it may be a tough nut to swallow, but we have no choice. We cannot continue on this spending spree without causing permanent harm to the country and to the economy, Doug.
In the case of states like New York, California, the blue states, when they bankrupt themselves or in that position, what role does the federal government play in that case?
Good question, because that will eventually come up. A bailout would mean the federal government, the president demanding that these states that are bankrupt themselves discontinue the activity that's bankrupting them. They'll be given no choice. And then there'll be a minimum bailout to meet the basic needs of whoever needs to be met in order to put them on a stable footing and start all over again. It's going to have to be that severe before they do it. It won't happen otherwise. It simply won't. And California, Illinois, maybe Massachusetts, maybe, well, I don't know about New York, but New York City certainly, they're headed that way right now to bankrupt themselves. And God bless them. Let them bankrupt themselves, hoping that they'll get a bailout. The bailout will be, as I mentioned, it'll be very severe for the government and for the people both. But our government has no choice. Out-of-control spending has to end, and people need to take care of themselves. And it won't happen until it gets to be an absolute crisis, Doug. It simply won't.
Yeah, you know, John, I it was interesting because this weekend I had a little bit of downtime, and I started to watch a series about the Civil War. And there are numerous series about that topic. But this one included the political and social the run-up to the Civil War. And a lot of things, I noticed a lot of similarities in terms of, well, the politics. Obviously, you have to make a few changes and updates because of the things taking place now and the difference in eras and time. But there's a lot of similarities between the, no, I'm going to say 1860, 61-ish, you know, in the time period to today. And I said that only to say that I think that we're going to see a tremendous, like you said, I think we're going to see a tremendous rift between states, as well as between the states and the federal government. And I think people who are paying attention like yourself and are educated in this topic can see that as well. So you're 100% right on that.
Well, I watched the film Gettysburg, and they had these two black men reciting the Emancipation Proclamation, which did not free the slaves in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe we can talk about this, but first of all, it was not a civil war. A civil war takes place inside one country. We had two countries. They both were independent countries with constitutions, defined borders, elected officials, postal service, money, and so forth. It was not one country having a civil war, but one country invading another. It wasn't about slavery.
That's correct. And yes.
And it needs to be emphasized over and over.
And if you want to expand on that two-country aspect, because a lot of people don't really... in fact, it had to be reinforced in my mind, and was reinforced when I watched this series. But if you want to expand on that, go ahead.
Well, let's see if I can name that. All during the Civil War, in fact, when President Lincoln's heart stopped beating, slavery was still illegal in the United States of America. The Emancipation Proclamation did not free the slaves in the United States of America. What it attempted to do was free slaves in a country it didn't control. And as the various Union generals captured and went through the various states, the Confederate States of America, they freed slaves in another country. While all during the Civil War, in fact, we like to have examples here, it was very possible and very likely that the sons of slave-owning northern farmers fought against the sons of men in the South who never owned a slave. One quote, General Grant, and General Lee are two of the more famous generals. All during the Civil War, General Grant, U.S. General Grant, United States General Grant, owned at least one slave. General Lee did not. General Grant, when asked by reporters, why do you own a slave? And he said, quote, and this is kind of tongue in cheek, a good help's hard to get. He really did say that.
Hey, John, your video's off, just in case you didn't hear Eric the Tech. Something happened, John. We can't hear you now.
And I got that back on. Okay. Anyway, the Civil War, as is commonly known and commonly understood, is not correctly known and correctly understood. I'll ask you a question, Doug. The worst riots in the history of the country where the most people died, what were those riots?
The worst riots were them. I don't know, John. I got a few in mind.
The anti-draft riots in the North during the Civil War.
Oh, really?
The worst riots with the most loss of life were the anti-draft riots in the North during the Civil War. Absolutely, they were.
And, all right.
The Emancipation Proclamation, well, first of all, if it was about slavery, the first thing Abraham Lincoln should have done was free the slaves in the United States. But he didn't do that.
No.
They were still slaves when he died. The Emancipation Proclamation was a political ploy in an attempt to get more support in the North because the support was going away. The loss of life, not so much from death by battle, but death by illness in the United States and in the Union and Southern Army, both were horrible. But that's kind of a side note. But the support for the war in the North was waning very terribly. That's why, and people didn't, these guys didn't want to go fight anybody. It was not their fight. And my analysis of what's called Civil War, it was a war over the tax revenue, what was to be done with the proceeds. The Southern states were the revenue generating machine of the United States. They were generating the revenue, which generated the taxes, and the taxes were all going north, and almost none were being spent in the South. So the North was getting the benefit of the tax revenue being generated from the South, and the South was tired of it. They said, well, we're going to keep our tax money.
Yeah.
I need to read more about this, but the officer in charge of bombarding Fort Sumter did so on his own volition. He was acting without orders from the higher ups, and that completely. Caught the Confederate States of America, the President, the Vice President, the Congress of the Southern States off guard. He was not authorized to do that. And the Confederate States attempted to make amends for this unauthorized attack on Fort Sumter, which by the way, was a tax collection point. President Lincoln and the U.S. Congress saw an excellent opportunity to declare war against the Southern states, and that's got the whole thing going here. That war did not have to happen.
I agree with you. It did not have to happen, but the adage that all wars are makers wars, I do think that that played into, or that was, that could be said about the Civil War, especially when you see the backing, the foreign influence and the foreign money backing both the South and the North. And so there's that component to it as well. But some of the things that concern me as they relate to today's current events is you've got certain states that act as sanctuary states. You've got certain cities and mayors and governors and council people acting to impede the constitutional duties of our government. In fact, you know, getting rid of the illegal aliens, illegal invaders. And you've got the federal government being hamstrung by circuit or by district judges, non-elected. That's judicial tyranny. You know, they yell about fascism. They yell about this, you know, no kings, yet you've got kings in magisterial districts binding the hands of our executive branch. What the hell's that about? So,
well, it's all temporary. These federal district judges are all being reversed. It takes a matter of weeks, sometimes a month or two, but they're all being reversed.
But none of this, though, is really great for our country, John.
Not at all.
It's ripping us apart, and I don't know. But can we get out of this? Do you think? I mean, I don't want to be a downer about this, but man, there's just a lot of stuff.
Well, there's a saying: you can vote yourself into socialism, but you can't vote yourself out of it.
Yeah, that's how true that is.
And what happened in New York City was an aberration. He had a very high support among women under age 30. You know. My grandson is 27. He was 3 years old when 9/11/01 happened. He has no recollection of that. Women under 30 have virtually no recollection of the Muslims attacking the Twin Towers in 9/11/01. And so they just see this Zohan guy as a friendly, upbeat guy that wants to have free childcare, free public transportation, government-run grocery stores that are cheaper than the private grocery stores. And they see it as all positive. They have no idea what communism really is, that communism cannot exist as long as people can escape. And that's why there was a wall in Berlin.
That's right.
That's why leaving Cuba was a crime. And still is, I believe. You can't. The Cubans can't leave Cuba unless they have special permission from the government. Any place where people can leave, enter socialism, they just leave. Some of these countries in Northern Europe, Scandinavia, Norway, Finland, and so forth. They're finally in Sweden. They're finally seeing their people leave also because of the burden of the taxation for all the free stuff that they get. And of course, accommodating Muslims as well. They're destroying their own country. It's kind of hard to imagine the great grandchildren of these Vikings who are ashamed to be Vikings in Sweden. But apparently they are, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And the, I think what we're seeing right now is, throughout the Western world is this, Islamic, attempt for this Islamic caliphate, like you've talked about so frequently. And we have, the establishment of a caliphate here in the West, and the intent of the, Muslim, Islam is not a religion. It is a system of governance. It's a system of oppression, and it is a mandate by the adherents to establish and take over wherever they inhabit. And that's, of course, you know, the U.S. is in the crosshairs. The U.K., we're seeing what's happening there. So to treat it as a religion, as one would treat Christianity, is wrong to think, I believe. So, and you've driven that point home, but look what it's doing. And you're exactly correct in what you're saying, you know, in the North, Northern Europe and such, man, it's a mess. So
it is a mess, and they've done it to themselves. Well, NATO did not exist in, was it 1756, the Battle of Vienna? I'm not sure
about
that.
Vienna is seven, something like that. Yeah. I mean, it's not as close.
Yeah. And the general from Poland united these various European armies to defeat the invading Muslims at Vienna. And this has never ended. Thomas Jefferson had a English translation of the Quran in his library. That is still in his library. And now we have smiling Muslims raising their right hand while their left hand is on the Quran owned by Thomas Jefferson. Of course, Jefferson got that translation to understand his enemy, the Muslims, who were capturing American merchant vessels in the Mediterranean, yep. Holding the Americans, kidnapping them and holding them for ransom, stealing the cargo. And the Marine Corps hymn is from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli for a reason. And there's an audio clip I have on my website from a Hollywood movie where the Marines are taking over Tripoli. And the officer in charge of the Marines orders them to fix bayonets. And they just went in and kicked butt and took names and took over Tripoli to stop the Muslims from capturing and kidnapping Americans on the Mediterranean Ocean. So the fighting Muslims is nothing new. We've been doing that for our entire existence, 250 years. There's been some pauses here and there, but in my opinion, Islam is not compatible with Western civilization. It simply isn't.
I think your opinion is more fact than opinion. And as you've pointed out, and I'd like to go back and cite your work. No, Islam is incompatible. The intent is for complete conquest. And people, it's almost amusing. It would be sad. Well, it is sad, but it's somewhat amusing that the very the people who are you know, promoting Islam, are promoting MOPA over there in New York City, their sexual preferences are incompatible with that ideology. So they're going to find out, you know, it's FAFO's kind of situation, right, coming to them. That, so, yeah.
Well, there's plenty of tall buildings in New York City for Muslims to throw the homosexuals off of. So that's what they do. That's their preferred way of execution of homosexuals is to throw them off a building at least four stories high.
And you know, the other thing too, John, and then you know, I just want to point this out: the Holy Land Foundation trial back in, I think it was 2005, Council on American Islamic Relations, tied to the Muslim Brotherhood, named as co-conspirators, unindicted co-conspirators in that trial, and it's we need our government to outlaw. I mean, just say, look, if you are a Muslim and you cannot hold political office, you cannot, because everything they do, like you said, is incompatible. All of their beliefs are incompatible with the Constitution of the U.S. And they're allowed to lie, of course, with impunity based
on
their beliefs.
That's right. That's right. But, lying is part of their religion.
Yeah.
So let's look at some of the things that are core beliefs of Islam. Having as many as four wives, assuming you can afford them. Marrying 7-year-old girls, because Muhammad married a 7-year-old girl, but he did the right thing and didn't have sex with her until she was 9 years old.
Right.
And very decent guy. Murder, Muhammad personally murdered, we don't know, probably hundreds of people, and authorized the murder of thousands on his behalf to spread the religion of peace. they don't believe in charging interest on loans. I don't know how you can make a loan without interest, but I think they have a way of getting their interest paid up front when a loan is made. Cutting off body parts, cutting off the hand of a person who shoplifts a pack of cigarettes can have their hand cut off. They have absolutely disgusting and incorrect hygiene habits. Where I know the University of Missouri Science Technology is very near me, and I've known a number of students. These Muslim students have never touched soap because Muhammad never touched soap. They don't use toilet paper. They wipe their behind with their left hand. Then they wash the hand with plain water. No soap.
Of course not. No.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is a practical heads up. Never, ever go into a restaurant where Muslims are working. Ever. Because the chances of you getting sick from E. coli are dramatically enhanced. Almost definitely you're going to catch E. coli illness because of eating in a restaurant where people have never washed their hands. How disgusting.
And John, some people might say, no, you're incorrect because, of course, the what do they do right before they, you know, bang their head on the floor in whatever worship? They wash their hands and feet in water.
Right.
But look into that, folks, and understand the community aspect of that whole thing, and as well as the.
Well, here's what's going on with the Hadith is about a million words that document the life of Muhammad, and the goal of Muslims is to duplicate the everything that Muhammad did to the best of her ability. Oh, by the way, Muhammad was illiterate, and there's a very large percentage of Muslims that are illiterate because of their goal, once again, to duplicate the life of Muhammad, who was, in fact, illiterate. Their goal is to take over the world. I can give a personal example. What do these people call themselves? It's a Muslim sect that a lot of Americans have joined.
Thanks, John. It's contagious.
It's contagious. Anyway, my wife, Dr. Moore, one of her chiropractor buddies, joined this sect, and she was invited to go to one of their ceremonies, and she went to it, and she came back. She says, "Oh, John, they're just such warm, loving people, and kind, and so forth. And I think I want to go back." I said, "Well, you should do that, but ask the leader of this group three questions." And she asked the leader of the group three questions. I keep wanting to call them Wahhabis, but they're not the Wahhabis. That's a major group in Saudi Arabia. So the first question was, what's the goal of this group of Muslims? And he answered correctly. The goal is to take over the world. The second question, how do you intend to do this? The answer, once again, correct. We intend this by peaceful, loving means. The third question, what do you intend to do to those who won't go along? And this was the real answer, the correct answer. We will kill them.
Yeah.
Now, this is from a native-born American who converted to this sect of Islam, which is known to they come out of Iran. They're known to be the most peaceful part of Islam, and are attacked by other sects of Islam, by the way. That's their goal, is to take over the world and kill those who won't go along with it.
That's a sad reality of things. And, you know, I don't think you can convince I don't even know what to say, except that a lot of people either are falling for the false version. And I got to say this, John, in the days and in the hours, days and weeks, and months and throughout the years following 9/11, and regardless of what anyone believes the exact happenings of that. But I blame George Bush and the tolerance of the right for where we're at today, in large part because reframing the true intent of Islam, Islamic leaders, Islamic adherents, it got us to where we're at today. And it's all lies. And it's very contemptible that they would push such lies about our enemies, declared enemies of both of our Constitution and of our Christian faith. I mean, it's just it's beyond comprehension that people cannot see this. That's just my view. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I agree. There's something we learn in the military is never discount your enemy. Never make fun of your enemy. Take your enemy seriously. Take their abilities seriously. I don't know exactly what we did in Afghanistan, but We spent 20 years, and we hear Secretary of Defense, President, Vice President talking about the U.S. military being the strongest, most powerful in the world. We spent 20 years fighting illiterate goat herders and lost. And we had no heavy artillery, no armor, no Air Force, no Navy, and we lost. What does it say about the most powerful military in the world?
Yeah.
Their army that we built up over 20 years, they didn't last 24 hours once we left.
Well, man, a lot can be said, summing from what from that whole thing. You're exactly right. I just sent Eric the tech. You know what, folks? This now, see, New York City is not going to change. And John, this is I got this on I got this video here. This is undercover covert video here from New York City. I got to show this to you.
Baha'is, that's what they're called.
That's right.
I got it. The Baha'is. Thank you.
Man, a little late, but you.
And they're all over the country.
Yes.
Even in my county seat in Steelville, there's a small group of the Baha'is. Oh, yeah.
And now the origin or genesis of that sect or that I'm trying to think of the John, if you want to go into detail on that, it's up to you, but I think you made the point on that, on that group, unless you want to add something. But I want to show you, before you do, folks, you got to see this. This is now, what, you know, Times Square, the old days, Times Square, you'd walk down the street, and of course, all of the clubs and the dancing ladies and such. Now, under this new Islamic communist mayor, look what we found here. Have you seen this? Eric the Tech, cue this up. It's only 15 seconds long. Cue this up. Gentlemen's Club.
What is
yours.
This place?
John, what you said before about goaters, I couldn't resist. So there you go. And for the audio listeners, it was simply a kind of a spoof. You know, the dancing poles of, but they're goats instead of girls. You get it, right? Okay. There you go.
Is that AI generated? Is that what?
I have no idea. They, you know, now I'm probably going to get inundated with some lawsuits for something, I'm sure. but you know, look, sometimes you just have to laugh when you want to cry.
I know. Well, we're doing it to ourselves, Doug, and it's our culture has been inundated with wokeness from top to bottom, left to right. My oldest grandson, when he had a college football scholarship, but in high school, Washington State, the state government mandates that every student who wants a football uniform will be issued one. So instead of 33 players on the sideline, like we had when I played, there was maybe, I don't know, 80 or 90. It was a bunch. Most of them never set foot in the field, including this one obese woman who was on the team, never set foot on the field during a game ever. And I was present during the last game of the season, and she's smiling, and her parents are congratulating her, and they're smiling. And so I asked my grandson about this young lady, and he had a three-word response. She can't run.
Weebles wobble, but they don't run and they don't fall down, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I use that as an example of the wokeness that's into every aspect of our society, top to bottom, left to right. Even in the nearest high school near me, I won't name it, but anybody who knows my neighborhood would know it. They hired a young lady to teach one of the classes. I don't recall what it was, history or art or mathematics. And her first year went well. And the second year she came back and she said, well, instead of calling me Barbara, you're going to call me Bill from now on. She didn't last too long. And can you imagine these 18-year-old seniors who shoot their first deer when they're eight years old and do heavy farm work when they're not in high school and drive pickup trucks and motorcycles, what they would do to this young lady who was mentally ill and thought she was a man. I would not want to be on the receiving end of their wrath.
You know, I was thinking about you and our discussions about over the last couple of days in advance of tonight, and we have talked about so much of this. And you look at what's going on today, and I see, again, you and I have spoken about this. The product of today is the direct result of our abandonment of God, of moral standards. You know, we have seen the collapse of the family structure. We've seen this pre-abandonment era, the pre-1960 or around 60, 1960. And when you consider that 73% in 1960 of children in the U.S. lived in two-parent households in one marriage. And then you've seen this explosion of in crime and violence because of our rejection of the biblical foundation, the lack of morals. And you and I have spoken about this, you as well. The mental health and suicide epidemic that we're seeing today is a direct, I think, in part result of the rejection of God and, you know, the purple hair, the tats, the piercings, the entire immorality of people from their appearance to their beliefs and their indoctrination to all of this, I think goes back to this, to the removing God from our society, from the classrooms, and replacing it with this ideology that's nothing but indoctrination.
Well, I agree. That's part of it. You know, there are several things that we can point to that were critical in getting us to where we are. Brown versus Board of Education is certainly one. And the Civil Rights Act, which along with some of the good things, included paying teenage girls to have babies and if they were not married.
That's, yeah.
And we're at a point now where even 40 years ago, one of the local high schools, and a friend of mine, his girlfriend was in charge of food service at this local high school, Normandy High School in St. Louis County. They were providing, they still do, of course, they provide meals for the children of the students. The children had to be at least 3 years old. And some of these high school students had two children more than 3 years old, getting there was 400 meals for the children of the students at the high school.
Think about that. Do the math on that too.
Well, that's a society that's, in my opinion, has collapsed when you have that. Quite frankly, I've spent much of my career defending young men charged with crimes, and young men who did not have fathers are much more likely to be criminals than those that did have fathers. That's no secret. It's well known. What the Civil Rights Act basically did with welfare was destroy the black family and destroy the black community. The black community was thriving before we started paying teenage girls to have babies without being married. It was absolutely thriving. And there's I'll mention a term that you may have heard in your career, but most white people have not. And the term is trophy money. Have you heard that term? Trophy
no.
money.
Okay. I have to say no.
Well, one of the young men I was working with defending, he was charged first degree murder. He was real proud of the five babies he had with five different women. And every month he got a payment from the women in exchange for his sperm donation, which created a baby in the first place. Trophy money. And this is common in a black community where the young men figured out decades ago that their sperm had value. And they enter into a contract with the young ladies, the teenage girls, that if their sperm made a baby, that they would get a money every month from the mother, from the welfare proceeds, the trophy money.
You're not funding me. You're not making me.
Oh no, you look at my face. I'm as serious as can be.
Okay,
I'm not making this up. Now, if your life is on the line, and this white guy helping defend you has your destiny in your hands, you're going to tell him things you would never tell a white person ever.
Interesting. Trophy. Okay.
One young man charged with first degree murder. I'm in the jail interviewing him, and it's lunchtime. The jailer says, "Would you like a tray, John?" I said, "Yeah, I'll take a tray." So I'm sitting in the interview room with the guy charged with first degree murder, and we both finished, except for the blueberry cobbler, and I finished mine, and I see he hadn't eaten his. I eat the blueberry cobbler off his tray. Do you think everybody in the jail knew that before the day was over? That the white guy ate the blueberry cobbler off the tray of the black criminal charged with first-degree murder? Do you think everybody in jail didn't know that before the day was over?
That would travel. Yes, that would.
Of course. We proved a guy innocent, by the way. On appeal. It was a very bizarre case.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I have a feeling you and I would be on opposite sides of the courtroom there, because I mean 99% of my investigative work into homicides has been for the prosecution or for the police, as consultant for the police. So whereas you, of course, a very important function, but you've kind of centered or focused your efforts on the defense side, which, and let me just say this, getting a proper defense these days, or even
it rarely happens, quite frankly.
Rarely happens. And thank you for, you know, being there, because, man, we've both seen stuff.
Here's a great, people like a great story. Okay. Our client, big black guy, he could have been a linebacker for a professional football team. The girlfriend who died was 5'2", maybe 105 pounds. He beat her in broad daylight at high noon on a really busy street in Mount Vernon, Illinois, and she died.
Okay. Now I want to. Okay, let me soak this in. Say this again. The victim of this homicide was the one.
5'2", 105 pounds, black female.
Okay.
The perpetrator charged with first degree murder was 6'2", 6'3", 210 pounds or so, you know, well muscled in his mid 20s, mid to late 20s.
Cause of the, yeah, go on.
Well, we haven't got to that.
Oh, okay.
I get the autopsy report, and I had a toxicologist I was working with who taught toxicology at the St. Louis School of Pharmacy. And I call him up and I say, "Doc, this woman had cocaine in her blood." And he says, "How much?" And I tell him how much. And his next question was, "How long after death was the blood drawn?" And I told him it was 12 hours. And he says, "Here's the deal, John.
Do the math. Go ahead."
This woman had enough cocaine in her blood to kill four people hours after she died, and the cocaine metabolizes. There's half as much cocaine. It was every hour, every 90 minutes, as there was 90 minutes before.
Right.
And she still had enough, after 12 hours, still enough cocaine in her blood to kill her. So I told the attorney, Mr. Shaw, I said, "We need to do this for our defense, that she died from a cocaine overdose." And we cleverly disguised our defense until after the jury was picked. The prosecutor thought our defense was going to be our client was trying to subdue the wild woman who was wild from the cocaine she had ingested. Only after the jury was picked did the prosecutor figure out our real defense was the girl killed herself with a cocaine overdose. The jury, this is critical, the jury had already been picked. He stopped everything, went back to his office, and typed up a new charge that our client had forcibly injected cocaine to this woman and killed her.
Okay.
You can't have a new charge after the jury's been picked.
That's
You can't do that. But I don't know if the judge and the prosecutor went to high school together, but the judge allowed the trial to move forward.
So, okay. Wow.
It gets better. Our guy was convicted at the trial level, but won on appeal, as obviously he should have, because the girl died from a cocaine overdose, not from being beaten.
Shades of George Floyd did come to mind, but again.
Well, I haven't looked into it, but whoever withheld that second video of George Floyd sitting in the back of the patrol car, handcuffed, saying, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." That wasn't released until, I don't know how many people died and $1 billion worth of property destroyed. If that had been released immediately, there would have been no riots.
Exactly. And, yeah, yes. And
whoever withheld that video is responsible for dozens of deaths and $1 billion worth of property damage. Whoever's responsible for that.
And sadly, it's more of a narrative-based legal system or legal approach as opposed to a system of justice. And that extends from the local environments to the vast Department of Justice, you know, from the state level or state crimes to federal crimes. And that's what we're seeing right now. And the erosion of trust in the various agencies. I have to say, well-deserved erosion of trust, because they have eroded our trust what's driving them is not the pursuit of justice, but the pushing of a specific narrative or belief that's the driver of their actions to either file or not file charges against people. I mean, from January 6th to the George Floyd / cases like that, okay, it is a travesty. It really is. And we need to change. Or if we end up, we either have to what are we going to do? Can the FBI be reformed? Can it be reformed, John? Or do we have to burn it down and start anew? Metaphor. Or,
well,
you know.
There's Cash Patel's, I mean, he can't fire everybody. There'd be no FBI. He's fired everybody who took a knee for George Floyd. That's a start. But all the agents, and there was more than 1,000, I believe, agents involved in arresting people who walked through doors held open by the police.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why would you think you're committing a crime if the police are holding the door open for you?
You know...
And you stay between the velvet ropes. Don't harm anything.
Exactly. And there were obviously, look, admittedly, some people didn't, but
well, there was way more than 100, what, 200 or 300 federal agents involved in the January 6th. And what did they do? And what did they not do? Did they involved in property destruction or hurting police officers? Did they try to stop anybody from causing property damage and hurting any people, which should be the responsibility if they're an FBI agent were in plain clothes? Don't they have a responsibility to stop property damage and stop people from being hurt? Does that stop because they're in plain clothes?
And having been an operational asset for the feds, yes, I'm sorry, but I really am not, because this is back in the 90s. In the cases I worked on or in conjunction with or as an operational asset, yeah, that would not fly. No.
Did these FBI agents undercover, did they encourage violence? Did they encourage property damage? Did they encourage people to be hurt? A lot of unanswered questions here.
Yes. And the people who were incarcerated and their rights were deprived under the color of law for their actions on January 6th deserve answers and deserve to be restored to the extent possible. I mean, you've got numerous J6 people involved in J6 who committed suicide because
their lives were destroyed.
Exactly. So,
and we've talked, it bears mentioning again, a client of mine who would be charged with murder, they'd be arrested, brought before a judge, and have a bond hearing. No more than, well, even on a weekend, maybe 48 hours at the most, typically 24 hours. They'd be brought before a judge and there'd be a bond hearing. These men and women who didn't hurt anybody, walked between the velvet ropes in the U.S. Capitol, were held without bond, sometimes in solitary confinement, treated worse than somebody who just committed murder. That's completely unacceptable.
Yeah, it is wrong. It's wrong-headed. And this is a really emotional thing for me, because I look at some of the people, the men who just great guys. I mean, who did nothing wrong. You know, they broke no laws. They did enter the Capitol building, but they were overcharged. And then, of course, the very same people that made the charges and that judged them in their trials are the very same people that need to be held to account for a lot of other judicial prosecutors.
If a man was arrested and charged with murder, not brought before a judge within 2 days at the most, the defense attorney would be in front of a judge ordering the prosecutor to have a bail, a bond hearing. If not that, going for the attorney general of Missouri to make sure that there was a bond hearing within a day or two. That's the way a system should work and does work. But what was done in D.C. was completely unacceptable, completely against the rule of law as I know it and understand it, and it should never, ever happen again.
No, you're 100% accurate. And for this stain to remain on the legacy of those individuals as well as our nation, to me, we need to push for accountability. And we see a lot of talk about this, which is the problem I have, John, conversationally here. You know, we see a lot of talk. Hey, look, you know, Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, Pam Bondi, they're all looking into all of this, or hearings are held in Congress. But the real, to heal our country, those people who have abused the law in terms of, by way of their position as a judge, as a prosecutor, they need, and very much so as Capitol Police officers and others in that group, they need to be held to account. And all of this needs to be made known, and the history of that day needs to be corrected.
It does. Well, it's headed that direction. Trump issuing those pardons was a great start, but that's just the beginning. There's a lot that needs to be done to correct the FBI, the Department of Justice, being used for political purposes. It just needs to be brought to an end. Until it is, people will not have any faith in the FBI or the Department of Justice, either one, will they?
No, it's sadly, you know, it's sad. And I look at you can sign on to X or any social media news feed and see how many times, straying away or just moving slightly away from January 6th, you have judges that have let people go on their own recognizance they murder someone. They've had, 40 other previous arrests, some for violent crimes, yet they're granted bail. They're allowed to roam the streets. This is not by accident. This is by design to destroy our country from within. This is part of a larger process.
It is.
When you look at it. Yeah.
Well, when the communists took over Russia in 1917, they immediately sent agents to this country to begin causing problems in this country, and they've been at it for more than a century with great success. I'd love to see the House Un-American Activities Committee put back into service, or an existing committee take over those duties. I'd love to see loyalty oaths put back into use again. And eliminate communists from labor unions or from universities and any place we can find them. They need to be treated as what they are, enemies of the state. They're not just people with different beliefs. They're enemies of the state who want to destroy our republic.
You know, there are existing laws. I think I do, and forgive me, the McCarran Act comes to mind, but I do believe that there are already laws, the federal laws that exist that disallow anyone who adheres to, promotes, or is a follower of communism, and specifically named communism, in the U.S. cannot hold public office or cannot hold positions of authority, cannot be appointed to or elected to because of the disqualification and the incompatibility with our Constitution. So there are federal laws, or there is a federal law, and forgive me, McCarran Act, but I believe there's an additional federal statute that prohibits individuals, again, adherent to the communist ideology, from public office. So I'm just saying, you know, we have to enforce laws like that, not create new ones, enforce the ones that are on the books. And look, if you're elected in Minnesota and pledging allegiance to Somalia, there's a problem there. And, you know, that should never be allowed. Or if you voted for a communist back in 1976, John Brennan, and, you know, perhaps changed to, converted to Islam from your station position in Saudi Arabia. Yeah, you might want to take a look at that, John Brennan. But again, here we are, and there's a lack of accountability that's eroding the trust in our institutions. But go ahead.
Well, President Eisenhower signed the Communist Control Act in 1954, which criminalized membership and support for the party of communist organizations on the basis that communists vowed to overthrow the government of the United States. So that's one of the laws there.
The what I was missing, of course, was the Communist Control Act of 1954, which followed the McCarran Act. That was 1950, and then of course prior to that was a Smith Act. So there's ample laws that have not been overturned that prohibit communist that communist doctrine and prohibit communist organizations from acting in positions of authority within the U.S. So just saying, they're hostile foreign powers, considered hostile foreign powers by law here in the U.S. So,
well, we need to expand that to include Islam, quite frankly. Yes. Islam is a clear and present danger to the entire Western civilization, not just the United States, but Western civilization in general is at risk by the spread of Islam.
Yeah, it is. We see this. I find this sad but fascinating to watch this play out. This Islamic takeover of England, the UK in general, specifically look at London, you know, the takeover. Look at Paris. And if you expand throughout Western Europe, Paris, of course. But look at what's happening here. In certain states, certain cities, these Muslim enclaves, man. And Texas, what the heck with that encampment down there? That's it's not right. I mean,
well, we're 150,000 square foot campus is hardly tents. They're real serious about what they're doing in Texas.
I'm telling you. We lack, I think, leadership with balls, and male or female, but we lack in my view, the people who are that really give a damn about our country, about our culture, about our beliefs. We've strayed so far away from both the Bible and the Constitution. It's a sin, and we need people to stand up and say, no, not now, not ever. Get the hell out, and we're not going to put up with this. But that's, again, that's my view, and people are welcome to theirs, but I think you're right. Along with communism, we have to make it laws that ban, outlaw Islam as a political or even an ideological driver of individuals. And if you adhere to that, fine, but you cannot hold office, you cannot You cannot be a cop, for example, because of the implications there. So if you cannot uphold the Constitution, you cannot hold any position of
Here's something our listeners can do. Put the following words in your search engine: the perfect man billboard. The perfect man billboard. These billboards have been around in different parts of the country. And I'm looking at one of the billboards now. At the top, it says, "The perfect man," in quotes. Then it has six bullet points. Married 6-year-old. Bullet point number one. Number two.
I'm sorry for laughing. Yeah.
Next bullet point. Slave owner and dealer. Next bullet point. Rapist. Next bullet point. Beheaded 600 Jews in one day. Next bullet point. 13 wives, 11 at one time, and last but not least bullet point, tortured and killed unbelievers. And then it says at the bottom, educate truthophobes. Nothing's mentioned about Muhammad or Islam, either one. All it does is give historical facts about Muhammad without mentioning his name, without mentioning Islam.
Now let me guess. That billboard or those billboards were not, I mean, that's obviously hate speech, right? And they're considered as such, or, I mean, you're not even naming it.
Here's a quandary. If you're a Muslim and you say this is hate speech, you're admitting that it's true.
Exactly.
Because Muhammad is not mentioned at all. Islam is not mentioned at all. The only thing it mentions is historical facts that are easily proven. So the quandary for the Muslims and their clergy is, if we say anything, we admit these things are true.
And therein lies that issue. Yeah. So... By their own, by protesting, of course, they would self-identify, and I get that, and it's interesting how that would play out. But you know, again, I go back to the indoctrination of a large segment of the American public, whether it's at the levels of higher education or throughout the schooling, you know, and from elementary through high school. This element has got, and regardless of the issue of perversion, whether it is that Islamic belief system or the trans agenda or whatever that issue is or those issues are, the indoctrination is so heavy that you're looking at really the product of multi-generational indoctrination today. And it is somewhat difficult, I believe, or it will be somewhat difficult to change, if that's even possible, the intellects or the minds or the understanding of those people, and then change, of course, the methods or the practices in our systems of education. I'm having a really hard time looking at this and saying, man, you know, all we have to do is change one or two things, but it's so much, I think it's going to require so much more effort than that. But go ahead, sir.
I agree. Well, yeah. Something we didn't mention about Islam is, it's since the 900s, so we're looking at 13 centuries. With four generations per century, they've been marrying their first cousins.
That's true. John, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I saw a report on that, and I'm not sure who referenced that. If it was John Guandola, or, and forgive me if that's, but yes, the interfamily marriage part of this is a big problem. Continue. But I just saw that, and I don't think I saved it, but go ahead.
Well, when you engage in activity, you're going to get low IQ, birth defects, and other issues. You can look up the average IQ for every country. The Muslim countries are at the bottom, with Pakistan being the worst. And that's one of the issues with England, is a majority Muslims in England that came from Pakistan. The average IQ, and I don't want to get this wrong, it's either 70 or 75, which is borderline retarded, moronic. Let's see, Pakistan. And IQ. And
And while you're looking at them, we see this on display, John, and folks, if you look at one at certain videos, that some people will say, well, that's the fringe of society being shown on social media. In part, that statement is correct. However, that element, that fringe, is growing in number, and there's quite a few reasons for that. And not the least of which, of course, is the question I often hear is it nature or nurture? And I would say it's both. When you get into the Behavior Illustrated, that is supposedly represents just the fringe element of society, but when you look at it deeper, there's a much greater problem, and that is that has to do with nature and the propensity for certain parts of our society to, I'll say, intermarry, as well as, of course, the drug use during the gestational period and such. So, I mean, we have a big problem here, is what I'm saying. And again, nature, nurture, environment, or, you know, some sort of natural part of this, but it's both. And it's troubling to see. But go ahead, continue, sir.
There it is. This one ranking, I'm not sure what the reliability is of some of these rankings, but it's if you've got a 75 IQ, there's not much you can do in a Western country in terms of being productive. Maybe work at a sheltered workshop where you're carefully watched to pack things for shipping, maybe, but not much else. And I know in Germany, for example, the industrialists thought that they would save all this money by bringing in people from Turkey, and it turned out to be an absolute disaster. They're really wrong. Very. It was. Okay, I'm looking at these average IQs here. Africa's got some of the lowest ones. I'm not seeing Pakistan. There's more than 100 countries here. Marrying your first cousin, having babies, is an absolute disaster, and they've been doing it since the 9th century with the predictable results.
The awkward aspect of this, look, folks, I mean, this is what it is. To think that we have to have this discussion in 2025, or we're having this discussion in 2025, should say more or mean more than almost the issue itself, because how did we get here? And I think that there's I go back to the surrender, the erosion of the big biblical principles that we were given, we reject those. So we are now reaping not the benefits, but the consequences of that rejection.
Right.
You know, so.
Well, this chart here,
with the Constitution.
This chart here says average Pakistani IQ is 87. That's pretty low. It really is.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell on it too much longer, but the bottom line is we need to have severe restrictions on Islam, on Muslims coming to this country. We need to deport all the ones who came here illegally. And I'm not sure that we should allow any foreign national to hold any public office, quite frankly. I don't think we should, regardless of where they're from. We don't need that. We got plenty of Americans to hold public office, don't we?
Yeah. Yes, we do. And I don't know, John, if you saw that Muslim, the guy who lost the bid for, I think it was for mayor.
Right.
And he's... He looks like that actor. Well, the actor who played on the the captain. You know, I'm the captain now in the piracy movie. Okay. Of those ships. I mean, for crying out loud, and speaking in his native tongue from Somalia, saying,
Somalia, right.
Yeah, I mean, it really, do we have to, I mean, when has this become acceptable? And what the hell are we going to do about this? You know, we are not a nation that was built on individual, built by individuals like that, where they bring their country, their third world garbage here. You know, they get, they're saying, hey, we're fleeing that third world mentality, that third world oppression, but yet they bring it here and expect us to live by their, you know, by what they're importing here. And that's just wrong. And yet we're told we must tolerate that, told by churches, told by, you know, the fringe left, but it's not the fringe left anymore. It's just the left, period. So there we are. Go ahead, sir.
All right. Well, this kind of tolerance will be the end of our republic. We simply can't do that. You want to come to our country, come here legally, assimilate, learn English, be productive, and have a good life. But don't bring your bizarre, freakish, dangerous practices with us, your bizarre, freakish, dangerous religion, and expect us to respect it. Islam is not compatible with Western civilization, period.
Yes.
It can't become compatible with Western civilization. It simply can't. If it wasn't for oil money, the Middle East would still be goat herders and camel jockeys, not much else. But their oil money has transformed Saudi Arabia and those other countries on the Saudi Arabian Peninsula into very wealthy places where they use their Rolls Royces for taxis and don't work. The Saudi Arabia, they import Filipinos to do all the manual labor that they can't do. But I've talked to people with Boeing, who they manufacture F-15s, and the U.S. Air Force attempts to train Saudi Arabian princes to fly the F-15s. And when they come into class Tuesday morning, they have to repeat everything they did Monday morning because these guys are so stupid. the average Saudi Arabian IQ is 87. Flying a high-performance jet aircraft requires a really smart guy. And they simply, you know, they don't have them. They're dangerous as hell.
And you know, I've mentioned this because imagine having a pre-flight checklist handed to you for an aircraft of that type. Okay, now it's all spelled out for you on the paper, but what I mean, if you handed it to me, I certainly could not fly that aircraft. Okay, so imagine, you know, through the policy of DEI, which bends that curve, expecting someone that's already cognitively impaired because of whatever, or with a lower IQ, given that same checklist and a little bit of training, or the training that's required, but not understanding the conceptual as well as not having the experience, and yet expected that they should be able to fly that plane. It's just not going to happen. So take that example and apply it to pretty much the whole of society. And that's, I think, John, I think that's what you're talking about. It's just not, it ain't going to work. It can't work.
No, it can't work. Yeah. It can't work. Our society is becoming more complex, more technical at every step of the way. Even being a janitor, I've used some of the products that janitors use. They'll have a 20-page booklet that comes with it so you don't kill yourself, because these products can be so dangerous. They're commonly used by janitors for cleaning and other purposes. you know, we usually think of a janitor being an entry-level position for somebody with maybe a high school dropout. But if you can't read the English language sufficiently to keep from hurting yourself, you're in big trouble.
No, I am. And we see this with commercial truck drivers. We see this with virtually every industry here in America. And it's depending on the industry, it's just more dangerous. So we have to have these standards. This is why DEI, and this, look, I blame Obama for really the acceleration of this, although it's deeper than that. I get that. But when you look at what has been laid out and constructed, supposedly, to be more inclusive, it's really has the tendency to kill us. I mean, we are endangering ourselves and our societies, our communities, by allowing this to take place. And it's just crazy. John, you are in the, you are one of the few people that we talk about this. I want to ask you about this. I don't know how many people saw this. Okay. Now, because I'm going to leave on a good positive note, and this Eric the Tech, I'm sending something to you here, and John, you have not seen this, so I'm going to kind of blindside you by this, but I think you're going to get a lot out of this, and John, I'd like your comment on this. Eric the Tech, it just cleared my computer now, but you've always talked, and you've maintained a consistency about the clot shots, the injections.
Right.
And so much has come out about those, and so much important information, but there's something else here. And there's another component to the larger issue of vaccines, the actual definition of vaccines. But anyone who has a dog or a cat or just a best furry friend, John, again, I'd like your opinion on this. A lot of times we're not addressing what we are giving our dogs, what we're giving our cats, and they're prized members of our families. If you don't mind, comment on this. This is information about vaccines and your best furry friends. Okay. And tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
Eric, let's see it. Go ahead and roll it.
Hey everybody, Jennifer Searsan here. If you have pets or if you are a owner of a rescue, you need to hear this video from Dr. Judy Morgan, veterinarian. She's talking about how they are now unleashing the mRNA technology vaccine bioweapons onto our pets to keep them sick and to kill them. So this is a next step in the New World Order. This is coming. This is happening. You need to hear the video, and please stop vaccinating your animals.
A quietly approved Merck's self-amplifying messenger RNA. The USDA has not conducted any long-term testing and consequently has not warned the public. Merck has launched a new rabies vaccine called Novavax NXT, which is based on saRNA, and veterinarians are now rolling it out across the United States. The saRNA replicates in your dog or cat's body and spreads throughout its organs and brain. Long-term effects? Unknown. Side effects? Oh. Increased aggression, excess salivation, seizures, vertigo, paralysis, and death. There was no long-term safety research by an independent lab. Instead, research was conducted by Merck's own Intervet lab over 14 days. That's right, 14. And the results were neither peer-reviewed nor made available to the public. 38 dogs and cats were used for the experimental study, and 35 of those test pets were euthanized after the two-week research period. And there are other vaccines in the Merck saRNA lineup, such as Novavax NXT feline leukemia vaccine for cats. Then there is the Novavax NXT canine flu vaccine for dogs. If your vet actually convinces you that your dog or cat needs these deadly shots, they are not inexpensive. Then there's the shedding. There is limited data on shedding from pets, but if you jab your pet with saRNA, you can bet your boots that you won't like the shedding if it happens. Make sure you have a veterinarian who informs you precisely what's in the vaccinations they give your pets before administering them, or find a veterinarian who is willing to tell you. Meanwhile, Big Pharma and Big Food are injecting messenger RNA into farmyard animals, incorporating it into cosmetics, skincare supplements, dental products such as anesthetic shots, floss, and toothpaste, and they are also planning to spray fields of vegetables.
And there you go. John, it's not news to you, but it's verification, I think, of what you've been saying.
They want to kill us. They want to kill us.
They want to kill us.
Right.
And they want to kill our pets.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know. But folks out there, the reason I thought that was important is because I know people who watch and listen to this show, they care about, they're like family, right? A dog, cat, they're like family. And if you have one, you want to make sure that they're taken care of. Well, hey, listen and do your research. But that's not surprising, is it? You know, and then of course the farm aspect a little bit different, but the fact that, you know, the food that we're eating, and here we are, you know.
Well, yeah, she mentioned it at the end, they want to spray the food. So, yeah, you know, they want to kill us. It's the bottom line. And make and create insane profits along the way. So they get both aspects. They make the insane profits and they kill us.
You know, they cause the problem and then they sell you the solution and then they make money from this. It's what you've been on top of this. You've been at the tip of the spear along with the so-called disinformation dozen, the truth tellers, you know, out there since the beginning of the scam of this COVID ordeal. And I'll tell you what, people are waking up, yet people are doubling down on the other side as well. So it's a battle between ideologies.
It is absolutely. Well, I keep doing my work to inform people, educate them, and warn them, and you do your work, and we do what we can. We reach the ones we can, right, Doug?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not here to convince anyone. I don't think I can. I don't think you or I can convince people who are so dug in and who are so mentally, you know, held hostage by what they consider the science. It's just not going to work. So we'll save who we can. We'll inform who we can, and then the others. Well, God bless you. Go with God, and
that's right.
May God help you.
That's right.
And, okay, but we're at the end of the show. John, please promote your...
Okay. Well, my daily show, Monday through Friday, is 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time, on Republic Broadcasting. Everything's linked to my website at thelibertymedic.com. I have a one-hour video podcast every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central with a different guest every week. And... that's it. Everything's linked to my website. The live show is audio only. My archives are video. We have video archives on 8 different platforms, Rumble and Brighteon and so forth. And that's what I do with a list of guests who are very knowledgeable, world-class scientists and doctors and other people knowledgeable in their areas of expertise, Monday through Friday.
I'm going to tell you what. There are only certain... Because of time limitations, there's only certain programs I can listen to. Your broadcast is up there, of course, and it's very informative, the people you have on, and I appreciate you educating everyone. And John, I so appreciate your gift of time, and that is a gift coming on this platform and talking with people. I so appreciate that, because you could be sleeping, as you're going to have to get up in a couple of hours anyway for your own show.
5.5 hours. I get up for 5.5 hours.
Well, look, my friend, get some rest. God bless you. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate everything you do.
It's always fun, Doug.
All right.
We'll do it again next month. And happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
You too. You too.
Thank you.
And again, thanks for your service, my friend.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
All right. All right, folks, that was John Moore. TheLibertyMan.com is his website, TheLibertyMan.com. Just a tremendous man and a guy we have a lot of respect for. Again, I've found myself on opposing sides of the courtroom, you know, his, of course, his, in a friendly fashion, him providing a lot of great defense for individuals charged with mostly homicides, and myself working with law enforcement and other entities on the other side, the prosecuting side. So, however, there's a mutual respect there. And their combined experience is, I think, like I said initially, 78 years together. So, interesting man indeed. Folks, tomorrow night, Paul McGuire, man, I'm going to tell you what, if you're not ready for this, you got to buckle up, because he's got a lot to say. He's always a crowd pleaser, but we're going to be getting into some really, really deep deep things tomorrow. So with that, I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And please subscribe to this platform if you desire on Rumble. Just hit the subscribe button.